Welcome, everybody, to the very first podcast episode of the This Land Yoga podcast. And today we have a very special guest, Holly Bray. If you've been around the studio, you've likely taken one of her classes. She is a wonderful teacher. She has a background in extensive training in Ayurveda, nervous system regulation, somatic movement, soft stretch release technique. She's an integrated positional therapist. She's been a yoga teacher for, I think we figured it out, 18 years now.
Crazy.
And she's got her 500 hour, well, I'm going to let her say it.
Shambhavananda yoga.
Yes. And
Yes.
so I am personally very thrilled to have her on here and hear her story because even though I've been a student of hers for coming up on 2 years, I don't really know her story. So welcome to the podcast, Holly.
Thank you. I'm
So
excited.
good to have you. And we will start by just if you want to give us a little introduction into how you got into yoga in the first place.
Yeah, it's been many years since I found yoga, but kind of going back even further, what led me to yoga was adolescence, childhood, my teenage years, just full of tension headaches. So I started seeing a neurologist in third grade. That was the first time that I went. I remember they hooked my head and we all up and we did the EEGs and the CAT scans because they had gotten pretty severe. And I'm sure as a parent now, if your kid's complaining of their head hurting every day, that can be a little scary. Everything checked out fine. So for the next till I was 18, I was under the care of a neurologist. And basically the treatment was they treated because my family had some history of migraines. My grandmother had migraines, my aunt had migraines. So that's what we called it a lot. Now that I know more about my body, I was not having migraines. I was not having the blinding headaches or the nausea. I was having just chronic tension headaches. But rather than kind of looking at the tension in my body at the time, I was on kind of a steady rotation of pharmaceuticals, basically, different types of drugs to treat those, and never really got relief. They'd come in waves, things would get worse at times, and I was able to discern even, maybe around high school, my headaches would be worse when I was doing a lot. When I was just too active, I was in too many activities or doing too many things, so I was starting to put some dots together. But finally, around 18, I had had enough of the treatment that I had been getting for a while. I just instinctively was like hiding pills around my room and not taking them. Just like, no, I don't want to take that. And looking back, a few of those medications that I was on have since been recalled, and they had, some really bad side effects. So I'm really grateful that I trusted my intuition there. But I sought out an osteopathic doctor around 18, which was a completely different experience. My first appointment with her, she actually put her hands on me, and I still remember her saying, like, "Wow, I cannot believe the amount of tension in your body for a girl so young." And of course asked me questions and things like that, and I wasn't under a severe amount of stress. I For me it seemed pretty like that's just kind of how I lived. I was really used to this amount of tension in my body. So she was the first person to finally suggest doing a practice for my body. Asked if I had ever considered yoga or meditation. And that definitely piqued an interest. I had always been an active person. I danced, I did sports, I went to the gym, I swam. So I knew I liked the feeling of being in my body and doing those things, I would feel better. So I did try my first yoga class at my gym, and I really didn't like it at all. I think probably because it was really challenging. And I maybe went to a couple when I was around 18, but it wasn't until college that I found my teacher, and I found a studio. And I really just started to dive in. It was the first class I went to because I thought I was really fit and in shape was like, I don't even remember what it was called, but it was a hot yoga class. It was a vinyasa or power yoga type class. And I was like, I'm fine, I'll go. And I was just dying the whole time. I was plotting my escape. I was like, next time they go in a downward dog, I'm out of here, like stripping off layers of clothing. But I made it to the end and I made it to Shavasana. Which was like, I don't think we did Shavasana in the gym yoga class. So I hadn't really experienced, like a true yoga class and a really great teacher. And so from then on, I was hooked, and started practicing throughout college. And I really even started to consider then, I think I want to do this, like I was going and checking out books from the library and always asking my teacher lots of questions and thought about switching my major to something having to do with yoga at the time, but ended up sticking out my horticulture degree. But pretty much immediately after graduating, I moved to an ashram in Colorado and started training to become a yoga teacher. So it's a very long explanation for my first
No,
yoga
it's
class,
great.
but that's how I got there.
So you essentially tried out yoga because of the tension that your body was carrying. And did you ever really find a reason for why you were carrying all this tension, or did it matter to you?
It didn't necessarily matter to me. I wasn't even at that time in my life thinking of like, I know a lot of things now. It's like look back to your childhood or look back to these things. Then I was pretty desperate to do anything that I could to not have a headache every day. So anything that I can do, and I would get little winks or little moments, maybe after a yoga class or during a yoga class, where I just started to really feel embodied. I think I told you a couple of weeks ago, like one of my after practicing for maybe like 6 months, I remember just being in the class and standing there and being like, I feel so tall, and I feel like a different person. I had a few experiences where, like in Shavasana, my face would start twitching and then my eye would just stream water. And I had no idea what was happening at the time. And I'm glad even at the time, I didn't try to intellectualize it too much. But now I do know, I'm like, oh, my body was like finally letting go and releasing some tension. I'm a Vata type person. If you know anything about Ayurveda, that's my constitution, which we're quick thinkers, we're fast movers, we're a little jittery. There's many things that can kind of make up being a Vata person. There's a lot of wonderful qualities, but we can tend towards just a little bit more of that anxiety. And for me, I didn't ever associate myself with having anxiety because I didn't feel mentally like I was experiencing anxiety. My relationships were pretty good. I had a lot of fun in high school, maybe too much fun. But I experienced some loss and hard times as well. But I think I just stored it all in my body. And I never was, had an opportunity like we have on a yoga mat to process it and to start to move through it. And it's not like I started yoga and immediately my headaches went away. That did not happen. And it's a constant journey and unfolding and a path I'll probably always be on. But it definitely sparked something within me of just feeling empowered, like, oh, there's something I can physically do. I don't have to make an appointment and go to a doctor and try this new drug. And I'm really, really grateful that I got on that path as young as I did. I can't really imagine where I'd be otherwise. Just in a lot of pain, it was starting to spread beyond the headaches. It was like my neck hurt and my shoulder hurt. And I even started physical therapy in college as well, and somewhat helpful. But I think it's a definitely a holistic approach, and yoga has been right at the center of that for me.
So you said you were trying out hot yoga in the beginning. And I've been to your classes now, which are very slow and mindful movement. So take me through that progression of how your personal practice changed over the years from, starting a kind of this intense hot yoga practice, it sounds like, but maybe I'm wrong. You tell me. And then, kind of finding what worked best for you and then translating that from a student to a teacher.
I would say it took a little while. I would say I had a pretty, I was doing the arm balances, I was doing the handstands, I was doing the mini sun
You were?
salutations. I was, yes. Well, believe it or not, I have proof. I have photos. I have evidence. I could do a really good arm balance. Funny story, the first time I was ever actually able to do like a crow pose that I'd been trying with my teacher. This was back in college for so long, and I wanted to do it so bad, and I could never do it. Like, I just, there was something blocking me. And one night I had a couple of margaritas in me, and I was telling my friends about yoga and how they needed to do it and trying to show up. And I just popped right up into like the best crow pose ever. So I just needed a little liquid courage, and I had it. But
Maybe you were intellectualizing it a little.
yeah, I was. Vata's very much have to do with the mind. But I'd say that my practice chilled out definitely after having a couple of kids. It's hard on the body and many things, but I really just needed to take care of myself after having a couple of kiddos and then caring for them all day long. Just that. It was like I really, my health, I had a few issues kind of crop up with my health. I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, which I don't really like to even label that or say it that often. I don't have it anymore. My levels are normal now, but I was experiencing a lot of those symptoms that come along with being hyperthyroid, and really even right after I started my teacher training, I was always seeking how yoga could heal the body. So I started practicing and studying therapeutic styles of yoga. So, and kind of back then, a lot of what I was getting was, well, good yoga, good alignment, and a good strong yoga practice is good therapy. I literally had a teacher that I studied with that was kind of his mantra. And I don't necessarily, I think there's so much more to it than that now. I think that the process, if you've come to my classes where we do slow down and really get into the body, we have to, especially for me, maybe that's why I'm so attracted to being slow, is I move fast. I can flutter about the house and do 15 things at once. I'm really good at it. Is it really good for me to do? Probably not. It is me, and I can slow myself down sometimes, but stepping onto a yoga mat is such a beautiful opportunity to slow down, and it's so good and soothing for my nervous system, for easing the tension in my body, just healing. I mean, that's how I started to approach things, and it's my teaching and my practice is a constant evolution. I'm always studying, really mostly with myself. It's great to study with other people and to continue learning, but the more I study myself, what I'm driven and called to is that slower pace, a mindful movement, which can actually be really strong, and that's what I'm working a lot on right now.
Did you ever have any agitation or anything like that come up as you started to move into this slower movement? Because I know sometimes when I'm in your class, and I've heard other students talk about it as well, and I'm just curious if you experienced it.
I don't think so. I think because I didn't force myself to do it until I was ready, if that makes sense. Like, I did start off when I first found yoga, I loved sun salutations. I thought they were so cool. And it was like a dance that I could repeat and do on my own. It was like how I started to kind of learn the practice. Like, had to go get a book from the library and, studied that. And it was something I would do every day when I'd get home from my classes. And I liked that repetition. I liked the strength that I did what felt good in my body. And kind of like I said, I think that the self-study, which is a tenet of yoga, svadhyaya or svadhya, however you want to say it, that's self-study. So, I think I was just honestly ready. It was like a tonic. It was something I was like craving at the time. And the more then, it was like once I started to practice it on my own and started to teach it because it felt good to me. And I teach, I teach what's working for me. That's just what I do. And as I started to do that, then I'm like, well, this is really interesting. And I might start to study. And it's like, oh, wow, here's all these wonderful reasons and benefits and what's actually happening in my body. But I just kind of found it naturally on my own, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Does that contribute to like your intuitive style of teaching? Because I know it seems like, and we've talked about it before, that a lot of times you just kind of do whatever strikes you in the moment
Yeah,
during
definitely.
class.
I don't know if I've ever, maybe right at the beginning, I would maybe sit and plan my classes, but it just doesn't feel natural to me. I look at my yoga practice and how I teach. It's a creative act. I'm not an artist. I can't draw very well. I love music. I cannot play music. I can't carry a tune. I love the arts. I love art. I love color. I love music, but I can't do any of those things. So my medium is my yoga mat. That's where I create. And every time I step onto it, it's going to be a different creation. Like I said, at first I did really like the repetition of like a sun salutation, for instance. Now I find that agitating.
A repetition.
A repetition or just something done the same way over and over. And really, again, I found that naturally I just like trusted myself that like to trust my body and to trust where I was in this space and time and to kind of really connect with my students with who was in the room in that moment, because you could plan the most wonderful class and then not actually be teaching to that time and space and to those people that are in the room. But if you're connected and tuned in and kind of going with your flow, I feel a connection then also with my students, and I'm hoping to tap into their needs as well, but we're all human.
What is like one, have you ever had like a lightning strike moment during your early on when you were practicing yoga where you realized, I mean, I heard you say like almost immediately you thought that you were interested in it, like maybe you wanted to change your major to be have something to do with the body or yoga, and it sounds like you got your major in horticulture. Is that right? Yeah. And so did it just feel natural to progress from student to teacher, and how long did that progression take? And or did you have like a moment of clarity where you're like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do?
I think it was I think you kind of know that a teacher is somebody who just wants to share. And that's kind of how I was becoming with my yoga practice, because I was feeling and seeing so many changes within me. I was just eating healthier. I cared more about what I put into my body. I cared more about the environment I was around, the people I was around. Again, it wasn't something that like a book that I picked up that told me to do it. My yoga teacher didn't tell me to do any of those things. It just started to happen. And I just naturally, it's just in me to want to share anything that I find like that. If you know me, I've actually been, I have to really practice the art of not like oversharing or telling everybody like, oh, well, let me tell you what I think. And, it's like, if they ask, then you can open that up. But with yoga, I just wanted to share it with everybody. I was just like to all my friends, like, hey, do you want to come over and do some yoga with me? And like, just really envisioning that. And I also like I like to teach. I taught, actually, I said I'm not very good at painting, but I taught ceramics, like painting growing up, but not that I was, it was like one of those paint and play studios, but I did that for years and I loved like teaching kids. I taught ski school. So yeah, that was just, I think a natural progression, but it was just definitely something that I just have continued to want to do. It inspires me. It's like, I'm still not bored with it. I'm constantly fascinated with it. And I, again, like every practice I do is like different and new. It might feel like a lot of the same movements, but for me, it's like this brand new creation every time. So it's definitely kept me really tied to it.
You talked about Svadhyaya, and So let's touch on yoga philosophy a little bit. What aspect of yoga philosophy do you find the most interesting for yourself? And then how do you integrate yoga philosophy into your own practice and into your teaching?
I'd say right now, awareness is just a huge thing. It's like everything. And that's so much at the heart of yoga. Especially if we're talking about like, I work a lot with people in with chronic pain or dealing with, these physical issues. And again, we can intellectualize these things. We can say, here's this that you can do, and here's something I could do to your body. There's things that you can do for your body, but the biggest piece to all of that is awareness. And I feel like that's what sets yoga apart so much, is that it's really about connecting with yourself and your inner guide, because that's your greatest teacher. I'm not in my student's body or a client's body if I'm doing body work on them. They are there. I think the real healing comes from us, from within, and awareness is just kind of everything when it comes to that.
Yeah. You can't make any changes if you're not aware.
I mean, I was just working with someone today, and it was like I said a couple of things to begin with, and it was just like it opened the floodgates for her of putting pieces together. Well, once you said this, and I thought of this, and then that, and it all went back to the breath. It's something really simple, and but so profound, so.
And you've been like, you have a somewhat new class, I guess you could still call it new, the Breath Lab class. Have you been doing some studying of more pranayama practices and things like that? Or is that something that you've always been really into? And then talk to us a little bit about the Breath Lab class, because I went to it and was shocked at how dysfunctional my breathing was.
It's crazy. Again, awareness is everything.
Yeah. Like I
I
was like,
can't
oh no, oh.
I can't unsee this. And we do it all day long. Yes, I have been studying the breath. Obviously, as a student of yoga, we study the breath, and for me, it started with your traditional pranayama practices. But I've been studying a lot more of the anatomy of the breath. And the dynamics of the breath, as opposed to just going right into a technique, as opposed to like how do we do skull shining breath or alternate nostril breath, and then just practicing it. Like, let's break down how we breathe, and honestly, how almost all of us are breathing in a dysfunctional way, and just work with the muscles of our breath, which we have two main muscles for our breath, our diaphragm and our intercostals, which really our intercostals are three muscles, but for simplicity, it's nice to think of two. I can overcomplicate things, but they're muscles, and we can train them. And so, and we can train our breath. And what I had found, even after years of thinking I was breathing properly and practicing yoga, and I've done lots of pranayama. I love alternate nostril breathing, but I was still breathing dysfunctionally. And I'm attributing my dysfunctional breathing a lot to my headaches. I started to find that whenever I was having kind of my bouts of spells of headaches, like I was doing a lot of chest breathing, I was doing a lot of like extra yawning, and I couldn't really exhale fully or have a really satisfying inhale. And I'd known that for a while. It had been, kind of, I've read some books, and it'd been kind of brought to my attention. And I just for years was just focusing on, well, I just really want to lengthen my exhale. Like that's first step, And now, and that's great, and that's a wonderful step, but that could still be challenging at times. And to get out of kind of that fight or flight state. But now I've really been working on training my diaphragm as a muscle, which it is, and it's a pump. And that, pump is what is actually moving your lungs. Your lungs are not a muscle. We need these muscles around them to move. And so we've got our diaphragm and then our intercostals. And we want to train strength for our diaphragm and flexibility, as well as with our intercostals. And what most of us are walking around with are pretty tight, restricted intercostals, and there are like three layers, like I said to them. And when our muscles are layered, they tend to get sticky, kind of stuck, and the fibers run different directions, right? So that's where, if you're not fully inhaling, expanding down here, we can get stuck in this pattern of this kind of stuff, which is then going to clog all of this and create tension. And for me, boom, tension headaches. Okay. And I'd known, years ago, even just, okay, one of the best ways, if I actually give myself time and space to calm my headaches down, is if I can lay down, close my eyes, and just focus on my breath for a while. And a lot of times that would get me out of a headache, but I didn't totally, I would still then maybe have a headache again the next day, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
But I'm starting to feel some big shifts in my own body by training the muscle of my diaphragm, building more flexibility in it, and as well as flex the ability to expand and contract in my intercostals. And so that's really what the breath lab is about. We're not doing, your traditional pranayama practices, but we are doing yoga with the movement or with the breath. And even in all my classes, it's just spilling over. Like, you're just going to get a lot of breath dynamics because it's like we're in these poses and we're opening up or we're moving. And what a great opportunity to connect to your breath and use that shape or that position that you're in to direct your breath in a little bit more. Because it can take some work to unlock those layers of intercostals. It's great to put your arms over your head and to move as you're opening them and breathing. It can take some work to strengthen the diaphragm, and to really consciously connect to it because we don't feel it like other muscles. So, yeah, I'm super into breath dynamics right now. That's my
Yeah, that lit you up.
current rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's great. And for our listeners that maybe aren't real familiar with the diaphragm, I would suggest looking it up online, and especially if you're like a visual learner. I think I showed you Holly one time or sent it to you on Instagram. There was a picture of the diaphragm moving, and it just really helped everything click for me,
Most
even though I'd
definitely.
been through the yoga teacher training and we talked about it and we looked at the skeleton and stuff. But actually seeing that, 3D image of the diaphragm moving and how it works like a pump, it just really helped bring that awareness to me. And then also for listeners that might not be familiar with the intercostals, do you want to kind of explain where those are and what that is, just so there might be several people that aren't really sure.
So to very simply, your intercostals, inter means between and costals means ribs. So between the ribs. But like I said, there's a layer that lines like the inside of your ribs. And there's a layer that goes between them and then another layer on top of that. And they run different fibers, different directions. And they are what gives your rib cage this ability to expand as you inhale, which whenever we're really fully able to expand and open, it directly relates to increasing our lung capacity, which is going to increase the oxygen in our blood. And then we also need to be able to contract. Right? That's resilience. The ability, resilience in our tissues is the ability to expand and contract. And we get dysfunction in the tissues when they get kind of locked one way or the other, usually in that kind of tight, contracted state. So, yeah, they're there to pump the lungs. Your diaphragm's there to pump the lungs. Also, your diaphragm is, your breath is one of the biggest pumps of your lymphatics. So I know that's a big thing that people are talking about these days, and just flow in the body, blood flow, lymph flow, energy flow, fascia flow, all these things. We need a healthy functioning diaphragm for those things to flow. Even our cerebral spinal fluid is, if we're using our diaphragm properly as we're breathing, it's going to help that flow.
Yeah. And so you would say to students who come to your class and maybe have an eye-opening awareness like I did, that like the awareness is really important, right?
I say this over and over, the first rule of breath work is that it's not going to create tension in your body or your mind. So, you take it in steps. Like I'm not going to count somebody's breath. I'm not going to say how long. I really want to invite it to be a unique experience for each individual. But I understand the feeling of like, oh wow, I can't exhale, or when I inhale, it feels really restricted. And so that's where, maybe we can work one-on-one a little bit, or you just back off and kind of like I did for even a few years, I just focused on my exhale and, breaking it down and exhaling slowly through the mouth if I didn't feel like I could get a long exhale through my nose, for instance, like just baby steps. But you can get
Yeah,
there.
that is always difficult for me 'cause I yeah. So I bet there are other people that struggle with it as well. I see
Definitely.
this
Yeah, we're
end
all
goal and
human.
that's what I want. I don't
Yeah.
have this patience, to take these little tiny steps. I always set the goal very high and then get frustrated when I don't reach it immediately. So
Yeah,
I
yeah. You're not gonna, train your lungs completely and increase your lung capacity and have like the all of that in one yoga
In
class.
one breath
No,
lock class, Holly?
sorry. No, I'm not that magical. But
I think you are.
hopefully you can feel really calm and relaxed by the end. So yeah.
Yeah, I would say even the times that I've had awareness that there was agitation or something coming through because I maybe wasn't as good as I thought I would be at something, or like I had an attachment in my mind that, like, oh no, I'm really good at breathing, for instance, like I've got that. That's not something I need to work on. And then, then it's like, oh, I'm really attached to that. And then I realized, like, oh, this is something that I could work on. And it's like, it's just comes back to that awareness, though. It's just really important. If you don't have the awareness, you can't work on it. So,
And it is such a worthy endeavor.
yeah.
It's so much. I'm starting to really feel a shift in my body and my breath. And it was definitely not overnight.
Well, and I think that's good for the listeners to hear and students to hear as well, as a teacher, that it didn't necessarily just come like super easy to you always either. You know?
I think most of
Sometimes.
us that are on this path, like to me, there's just towards healing. We've been on those really tough, dark roads for a while, and it maybe it's trying different approaches for a bit until you find the one that really fits for you too. Like keep throwing shit at the wall until something sticks, because it could be completely different.
Yeah, for everybody.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and it might shift as you change, like that's why I've never really attached to just one style of yoga. It's very hard to put a name on my classes, or when people ask me, like as I teach a vinyasa class, I had a student this week was like, wow, that was a really different vinyasa class. I've never done anything like that before, And I was like, yeah, we call it vinyasa, and I'm good with that because we're moving with the breath, and that is very much a part of my practices and connecting with the breath, but it looks very different than a typical vinyasa class.
Yeah, but it's nice. So if somebody is listening and they haven't been to that vinyasa class or one of your classes, they should try it out for sure because it is different. Okay, so how about before we wrap it up, I'll ask you a fun question.
Let's do it.
Okay, what's your favorite pose?
Oh gosh. I'm not the girl to ask
And
that.
I want a picture of you in the handstand or.
Handstand.
Yes, because I want to put it like on the show notes.
It's very hard for me to say what pose. I know it's annoying because like I feel like it's always a little bit different. And I'm always kind of moving, oscillating through poses.
Just
But
like right
probably
now, if you
like,
had to name one.
well, my all time, I think one of the best things is just like a supine spinal twist, like on your back and twisting your spine. And I have so many different like iterations of that that I teach, different like variations, and I love them all. And it's
Yeah.
so good for you. Talk about like in those spinal twists, expanding your breath into your ribs and into your belly, and all the wonderful things that it creates.
If there was One thing that you would want people to know about yoga, what would it be?
That it's I think it's like one of the most accessible practices, truly. And I know that that can sound kind of contradictive because if you go to a yoga studio and the things that people might think that they need, and I know it can be expensive at times or however you want to look at it, but truly just like for you, the canvas of a yoga mat or even just the ground, if you're connecting with yourself, being mindful and you're moving, you're doing yoga. So it's always there. It can you, and it's that's what I've loved about it so much is that no matter where I am in my life, or if I'm recovering from an injury or recovering from having a couple babies or feeling wonderful and I have all this energy or I'm recovering from an illness or something, it's always there if you take the time to connect with yourself and move your body and breathe from a place of loving kindness and just like care for yourself. So, and
Yeah.
everybody can do it.
It
It
is
can look so
true. It
many
can.
different ways.
I think, especially now that with the advent of social media, and maybe it was even like this before, I just don't remember. But I think people, they perceive yoga as, or people I've talked to have been like, I'm not flexible enough for that, or I can't do that with my body. And it's just interesting because those, that's not even like, to me, and I think probably to you too, those aren't even really the most rewarding parts of my practice anymore,
Absolutely.
And so like, I mean, it just evolves with you. I mean, I had a similar experience, believe it or not, with crow pose, where I just couldn't get it. I couldn't get it. I didn't have a couple of margaritas, but when I did get it, I was so proud of myself. And it is fun when you unlock those different levels of the asanas, and they're kind of like riding a bike almost, because once I got that crow pose, I can always get it now,
Because you're
and same
doing
thing
all
with
the
like
other
wheel.
things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, well, I think our time's about up. What do you hope listeners will take away from this interview today? And then where can listeners find you in the future if they're not already connected with you on social media, or if they're not part of the This Land yoga community?
Mostly how amazing This Land Yoga is. This is a This Land Yoga podcast. I feel so incredibly grateful every time I step into that door, whether it's as a teacher or a student. Shannon has created an amazing space. Not only is it beautiful, but it's open and welcoming. And I love the variety of classes that we have and to encourage students who are currently going to, all of our teachers are amazing. Like, try everybody out.
It's true. It
And
really
it's
is true.
and we're there, everybody's not the same. We're all different. And that's what's amazing. And that's actually what's so good for us to do. It's like do different practices. It stretches your body, it stretches your mind, maybe your spirit a little bit too. And yeah, we're all very fortunate.
Yes, it is such a wonderful community, with a crazy amount of talented teachers, and teachers that really care. And Shannon's a teacher and the owner, and the space itself, I feel like, just has like a really nice healing energy to it. And so if anyone listening hasn't been there but might be curious, you should definitely come check it out, because it's a very welcoming place. You get to take classes from amazing teachers like Holly. And Holly, we'll have to have you on again sometime once we've gone through all the teachers and we start talking more about like pranayama, or some things like
Whatever current rabbit hole I'm diving into. I'd
that.
love
Well,
to.
thank you so much for your time. And it was really interesting getting to hear your story about the chronic tension. I think that's something that probably translates for a lot of people, or just the tension in your body and kind of
Absolutely.
having that epiphany that it wasn't really happening in your head. That's just where it was manifesting as a
Yeah,
headache.
exactly. Yeah.
And so I really appreciate you sharing that. And We're friends, so it was nice of you to be a guinea pig on this first episode, so I appreciate that too.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, Lindsay.
Hey, listeners, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the This Land Yoga Podcast. You can catch Holly at her regular weekly classes on Tuesdays at 1:15, Wednesdays at noon, and Thursdays at 10 a.m. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and leave a review. For more updates, follow us on Instagram and visit the This Land Yoga Podcast. Until next time, take care and stay curious.